Welcome to In The Move For Podcast with Callum Reid of UltimateAddict.com and Pete Shepherd of InTheMoveForBlog.blog.co.uk.
Who will be your kindly hosts for the next 5,000 seconds?
Yeah, episode 16.
Our 4-month anniversary.
Oh yeah, we're going to have to do something for 25.
Yeah, just something random. Well, that'll be middle of the Oscar season, won't it? Should be.
It's coming.
Yeah. You can't stop it.
Downton Abbey's back.
It is. Murray won, for anyone, just in case anyone didn't know. Last week we were having... It was a theme. And I was actually strangely, peacefully content about that, which was a surprise to me, because I don't really like the guy, but I mean... Fair play.
Is that because it wasn't Wimbledon, or you just want people to stop talking about it?
Well, no, I was just when he won, I was watching him win. It wasn't any sort of like, I wasn't delighted. I wasn't like annoyed for him, but I was just like, I was just serenely content. I was just like, yeah, this is nice, which I was a bit surprised at.
But, just about time, kind of thing.
Yeah, and it wasn't Wimbledon. Well, it wasn't the Olympics where it's like, get in.
Yeah. Okay. So this week we've got... We're going to talk about this week's news a little bit first before we do the... The Toronto Film Festival ended and Silver Linings Playbook has won the Audience Award previously.
Which is a bit of a... you kind of know something...
Precursor.
Might do well. It's just this sort of... I think what Juno won it, Slumdog won it, I think.
King's Speech.
Right. So it's not necessarily that something's going to go on to win Best Picture. In fact, quite to the contrary, it's just indicative of something that's a bit of a crowd pleaser.
Yeah. So that's encouraging. And Jennifer Lawrence as well. Getting good reviews. And a bit of a minefield for the Best Actress race this year.
Well, when isn't it? It's always, it's always too... Well, it's hardly ever too deep, but I mean, sometimes it is, and then sometimes it's too weak and there's just nobody else, so there's always something up with Best Actress.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to start by talking about the new trailer for Steven Spielberg's Lincoln. So we're back to the Oscars.
Well, we think.
Well, big Oscar hopeful, but then so was War Horse, so...
Yes, so is Memoirs of Geisha. There's always... So is Dreamgirls. There's always something that comes
that
out...
That falters.
Falls flat on its face. And hopefully by looking at the trailer, it's this one.
Well, here's a clip of the trailer without further ado.
Congress must never declare equal those whom God created unequal.
Read the Constitution alone.
We are stepped out upon the world stage now, with the fate of human dignity in our hands. Blood's been spilled to afford us this moment. Now! Now! Now!
Abraham Lincoln has asked us to work with him to accomplish the death of slavery.
No one's ever been loved so much by the people. Don't waste that power.
This fight is for the United States of America.
And the cow's just woken me up.
I was drowsy a bit myself there.
And I think it was just the.
It's just all the same, isn't it? Always.
Well, yeah. And the John Williams score doesn't help. I mean. It's just ridiculous. That sounds ridiculous. Just regurgitated. Could have been in like about 4 or 5 of his previous films, and you wouldn't know the difference. It's almost as if he should just like go get some manuscript paper, write some stuff down, and then get an eraser and just rub it out because the man is decomposing. And it's just I stole that line.
And so is the music.
Yeah, I stole that line from Dennis Penis. He said that to Andrew Lloyd Webber on something like that. Along to Andrew Lloyd Webber on the red carpet once.
Yikes!
But no, it's just it. That's War Horse. The score for that was just ridiculous last year. It was just the whole opening act of the film existed solely to give John Williams something to do.
Yeah. It's just so traditional and classic, and in looks... a way that films shouldn't really be anymore. Or not shouldn't really be, but just aren't, because it looks so dated.
It looks... Well, the word... You actually heard my reactions as I was watching it just before we started. And I used words like depressing... and depressing because of like how uninspired it looks and just how completely by the numbers.
Yeah.
And it looks really, really boring and...
It's all indoor scenes.
Yeah, with the odd bit of war stuff.
Over cinematography, like, looks too much to me again. Oranges, browns.
Yeah, it just looks dull, the whole thing. Yeah. And
I think people are kind of getting wise to the Spielberg thing now, because it seemed like up until about maybe 8, 10 years ago that people seemed to have rose-tinted glasses on.
Yeah.
Whatever he did. And I think there are still people that will give this a pass because...
It's Spielberg.
Yeah, and it still might be great. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe it's just a terrible trailer, but...
It's been known to happen. I thought, I know people disagree with me on this one, but I thought the trailer for Brokeback Mountain was awful. I thought it made it look really cheesy, and it made me really not want to see it.
Yeah.
And in the end, it was only really because it was getting such good reviews. I thought, you know what, Pete, just go and see it. And I ended up really, really liking it. And I just thought, that is terrible because, I mean, I know people who wouldn't go and see that because it was about, it had gay content in it. And I was thinking, well, I haven't got a problem with that, and I didn't want to see it. And I didn't not want to see it because of the gay content. I didn't want to see it because it looked crap. And that's kind of what I'm forgetting with this. I mean, it could be an excellent film, but the trailer just makes it look so, so dull and just, ugh.
Yeah. I don't know who's put together this trailer, but... I mean, can you imagine young people going to see it after seeing this trailer?
I don't know. I can't imagine anyone in their teens thinking, I've got to go see this. What are you doing this Friday? Do you want to go see Lincoln? You get dumped before she even said yes to asking. You were asking her out. I mean,
I just wonder how long it's going to be as well.
Oh, God. If it's going to be north of 2, isn't it? You'd think.
Yeah. Probably. The Warhorse was about 2:20.
Yeah, I was thinking it's probably going to be the Dave Fincher 2:45. I mean, why is it that the films that should be that long, like Anna Karenina last week, aren't? And the films that have no business being that long?
Budget? Just
vanity?
Yeah.
Because you can? Oh, I don't know. Ugh. But, you know, it's Day-Lewis, and Day-Lewis always gives compelling performances. I can't think of... I actually can't think of one Day-Lewis performance that isn't compelling. So, that at the very least, is probably going to hold this thing all together.
Well, what about 9?
Yeah, maybe. It's certainly his least compelling, but then again, that's all about Penelope Cruz's backside. So, you don't have to be.
It's all about the women in that. But...
Yeah, the person that I went to see that, the girl I went to see that film with described the Penelope Cruz scene as pornographic. Oh, dear.
But you would expect Daniel Day-Lewis to still be great in this, whatever happens.
Well, yeah, there's no big dramatic scenes in the trailer, I mean, and thankfully so, probably, because I don't think they're really gonna be, given the character. I mean...
It could be a bit of a Golden Age situation.
Yes.
Cate Blanchett style.
Yeah. But then again, I mean, in the wrong hands, and I don't necessarily think Spielberg has a history of this, but in the wrong hands, Day-Lewis can be pushed too far. But he's kind of like his former, his ex, Isabel Adjani, who, even if, when he is pushed too far, he's got the ability to rein himself back in quite quickly. So
there will be blood.
Yeah. So it's I trust Day-Lewis. I don't trust Spielberg with this material. But
the thing is, though, this isn't. They haven't got this out of the encyclopedia. This was a book.
Right.
It's a relatively new book.
It's like a
that's
biography.
Supposedly respected.
Well, then again, yeah, but then again, he's not Jane Campion doing Bright Star, is he? And the reason something like that worked, and it was based off a book on the person, John Keats, was because she was allowed to do a lot of invention with it. in because he necessarily had to, because that story was only told from like one person's letters. So when you can have your own personal take on it, you can get a bit more under the skin and make it a bit more real, even though you're making stuff up. Whereas with this, I think he's such a beloved historical figure in America that if he takes any kind of liberties, then people are just going to hound him.
So, I don't think he would take liberties with anything, would he? He's not that kind of director.
Well, I know people didn't like his some people didn't like the way he adapted The Color Purple at the time. It was very successful, but there were criticisms out there on it. No such things with Schindler's List, obviously. But wait and see. But this has certainly really, really made me think. Ugh, and I've got no expectations of finding this one really a really brilliant film. But you never know.
Well, it's out soon. I think around the time of the election.
Right.
Which is unusual because Spielberg's films are usually December, but
yeah,
this one's gone earlier.
Well, makes a change. I'd rather get out early and get the word on whatever word is on it, because you don't want a situation like you had with Munich where it comes out late, half the people don't see it, and Eric Bannon misses out.
But then you don't want a situation like J. Edgar where people hated it and then it didn't get nominated.
Well, you do if it isn't any good.
But then you've got Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Yeah, oh, great.
You've still got in.
Extremely Max and Incredibly Oscar bait.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. Can we stop talking about this? I really have no energy on it. That was the thing. Shall we? What have I written down? Shall we stop the bleeding?
Yes, that's a line from it.
Yeah. Please do.
The bleeding of the slaves is this.
Sorry, stop this bleeding. Yes, please. And we're going to move on to Preconception Corner, considering that trailer's just created a load of preconceptions. So this week we're doing The Sweeney. I was going to say Sweeney Todd then, because I just wrote down the word Sweeney. The Sweeney, we're doing Dread, minus The Judge. We're doing Premium
Rush. Plus the 3D.
Yeah, Premium Rush. To Rome With Love or From Rome With Love? I'm so apathetic about this Woody Allen film. A, I haven't watched it, and B, I don't even know the title.
It's A Love Letter to Rome.
Too Rome With Love. Too Rome With Love, okay. About Ellie. Yes, at last. Hope Springs. Surprisingly, not a remake of the Colin Firth and Heather Graham film from 2003. And then that's it.
There's also a Sandra Bullock film, Hope Springs, right?
Oh, is that one as well? Oh,
yeah.
Popular title. Original, yeah. So, did you see The Sweeney? I don't think you did you?
No, I didn't. And I haven't seen any of the TV show, so right. Fire away.
Yeah, so my preconceptions were just purely based on the trailer. I think I did see like a little bit of it on TV when I was younger, just like reruns. It just, Ben Drew... just made me laugh in the trailer. I just thought, am I supposed to take him seriously? Don't know if I can. And I've never seen a Nicolov film, but I know he's got a reputation as not exactly being a classic filmmaker. So Judge Dredd, because I haven't seen this one. Sorry, Dredd 3D.
Dredd 3D.
Preconceptions?
Preconceptions... looks a little kind of video game-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like 3D in general.
Mm-hmm. Who does?
But the reviews are admirable, which is why I've given this a go.
Right. And we got Premium Rush. I had zero preconceptions.
What's I only it? Knew one line of the plot and right. didn't know what to expect.
Okay. The Woody?
The reviews haven't been very good, and... I didn't like Midnight in Paris. This we'll get onto later.
And then about Ellie. Well, I'll have to go back in time because I saw this 2 years ago. So my preconceptions before I saw it was that I'd seen the Beautiful City, loved it, and so I was just and it had the same girl from, and I thought the girl Taranoff Aliduzzi was amazing in the Beautiful City. So when I saw about Ellie, that was my major preconception that there was an actress that I really liked and that she was. I want she's going to be good. That was my expectation.
Yeah.
Okay. Hope springs, expectations, biases. Do you have a bias for or against Lastri?
I think we both know we have a bias for Lastri. Streep love.
Mm.
It looked a little fluffy. Wasn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, it just looked like he's sort of like normal rom-com to me. And
Nancy Meyers.
And the last time that Streep was in a rom-com like this was probably It's Complicated, and I thought that was one of her best recent... That was her best recent performance, i.e. after 2004.
One of the best, I would agree.
So that was my... So my preconception was that she was going to be good, which is what a shock, but I mean... Right, so I'm at first then.
You are.
Yeah, you can tell that this was the approach this week was divide and conquer. So we did a deal that I'd see the Sweeney. Well, I was willing to see the Sweeney, and Cal was willing to see Tread. And the Sweeney is about the London Metropolitan Police's flying squad. It's a Cockney rhyming slang term, so flying squad, Sweeney Todd. Hence the Sweeney. You do Lovely. Learn something new every day. And it stars Ben Drew, who I heard an interview with once, because I'm really out of the loop on like modern popular music.
Better known as Plan B.
Yeah, I knew he was Plan B, and I knew I'd heard an interview with him, which on the radio, which he didn't necessarily come across the greatest in. It was a lengthy one on like one of those like Front Row or something on Radio 4 or something like that. It's when you're in the car and you're driving down to London and you've just got the radio on. So I didn't really. So he's in it. He's a member of the Sweeney, and Ray Winston's his boss, sort of like stepdad of sorts. I can't remember. I was struggling to care. So what's happening is they go out and basically bust, shut down all the violent armed crimes. So if someone's knocking off, trying to knock off armed robbery, they go in there and bust some heads and make arrests and leave the collateral damage in their wake.
So they... But they're still part of the police force.
They they're a special part of the police force. Damian Lewis is in charge. He's like the desk guy, but he's like, he's got Ray Winston's back, but Ray Winston is basically running it. And one of the members of the squad is Hayley Atwell, who is a married woman who is having an affair with Winston. Why, I don't know. I mean, it's just so misogynistic, this whole thing, I couldn't even tell you. Apparently she likes having sex in pub, in toilets in restaurants. That's why she's with Winston, apparently. Her husband is the guy in internal affairs who Gels Priest is after Winston. He wants to shut him down. So that's the so it all comes down after a jewelry shop is robbed and a woman is executed. Literally, they're leaving, turn around, cap her in the head, and go.
Right. The owner of the shop.
No, the people who are robbing it. They turn over the shop. They've got them all like on their knees. They're about to go out the door, and then the last guy turns around and caps the woman for no good reason, apparently. So then they go after a bloke, get him, and it turns out that he's the wrong guy. He's got a perfect alibi, and so they've got all this. They've done all this damage, They
got nowhere.
And they haven't got the right guy, so it's all falling apart. It's going Pete Tong.
And so did the film, right?
Well, you know what? In some sort of weird way, and don't get me wrong, I'm not going to say this film is good, but in some sort of weird way, we've been trained over the years to accept the sort of rogue police officer as a sort of anti-hero. So it's the Dirty Harry thing. It's just been ingrained from day one. It's the stock thing you see in lots of TV and film. And it's the whole thing is, as long as you get the results, the methods shouldn't really be questioned. And that's all very well and good. I mean, don't get me wrong, in the sort of modern society, when you've got stuff like the Jean-Charles de Menezes thing, it's absolutely abhorrent. And this film does show... these guys in the London police to be trigger happy guys who are just doing it for the thrill of it all. And when you consider that they're not saying that in a sort of negative way, then the film doesn't criticise for that. It just completely glorifies it, obviously, because it's that kind of film.
Is this set in in the 70s?
No, it's modern day London.
Okay.
Modern day London. And so it's kind of depressing in a way that they're glorifying it all when you see it. But you do kind of roll with it, despite the fact that, I mean, it's sort of a double reason why those sort of like roles usually work. You know, one is usually because the characters are interesting. If you've got someone who's doing, it's the classic Western thing, the guy who, like Clint Eastwood and Unforgiven or what have you. It's all Clint Eastwood, all these things. But it's the classic, or John Wayne in True Grit, what have you. It's the guy who's real. John Wayne in True Grit's a perfect example. It's a guy who goes way above and beyond and does things that are probably illegal or probably morally wrong, but he gets the guy. So
you don't care.
Yeah. With this, the trouble is Ray Winston's character really isn't very interesting. It's the whole thing's, like I said, he's seeing Hayley Atwell. There's no reason why. All the women in this are basically men with breasts. They all take the mic. They all rate other women out of 10. It's all very geared towards the 15-year-old boy. And so the only reason Hayley Atwell says that she's with him is because he's better in bed than her husband. How would you know in the first place? Why would you want to be with him in the first place? I haven't got Scooby-Doo, keeping with the Cockney rhyming slang theme of the day. There's just these nagging little things about it that are just really distasteful. And then when they go in the direction they go, it's just so literally unbelievable how the characters are allowed to do what they're doing, and B, how the writers think that these little tiny things that would then cover up for everything else, and they'd still be allowed to do it. It's just
And has it got a lot of like little one-liners that are supposed to?
It has a few to like end scenes, the sort of Bond style lines. But the funniest thing is that they all look and sound so stupid when they're saying like technical terms like the circumference of the bullets. There's no way you even learn that word in school. I'm sorry.
How's Plan B?
You know what? Half the time he's all right, and then half the time he looks like he's just stood there with a cue card in front of him, and he's just like looking up like Liam Gallagher singing away. He's just looking up into it and just reading it off with no presence or what have you. But sometimes he has got a little bit of charm and. I don't necessarily believe him as a badass, but I mean, they get around it well enough that it doesn't.
Well, he is apparently quite a badass in real life. Mm. He's been a bad lad.
It's like the Mark Wahlberg thing.
Mm. Mm.
Winston's one of his most charmless turns. The character's just a train wreck. There's just nothing for him to work with. In terms of getting you to be interested in the guy, fascinated in him, or on his side, whatever. This thing, when he's sleeping with Hayley Atwell, I'm actually thinking, the internal affairs is always like, it's like a torch word. It's like, they're the gits, they're the gits, they're the gits. I was actually on the internal affairs guy's side. This guy's having sex with your wife. and he's getting people injured and killed left and right. And you've got to put him away. I wanted him to be put away. I wasn't actually.
It's not like a Ocean's 11 situation.
No, so I actually think it fundamentally fails in its setup to get you on their side. When I was actually feeling sorry for an internal affairs agent, what I thought they were going to do, I thought they were going to have like a twist at the end where something was going to happen, which would tie in with everything else. But then they didn't even go that way. They just went even simpler and even just less satisfactory. So while it wasn't, it's not satisfactory. It doesn't. Nothing I could recommend. Anyway,
great.
Yeah, it's so watchable in its own little way, but I can't give it 3 stars. So I can't give it 5 out of 10 because 3 stars for me is 5 or 6. So I'm giving it 4, but it's on the board. It's on the borderline. It's too. There's too. It's too much of a nasty aftertaste after it all. Really.
Yeah.
But it does what it says on the tin. Certainly. Certainly.
Okay.
Right, so does dread do what it says in the tin?
Did it instill dread in me? well, it's not dread, it's dread 3D.
Right.
And it is 3D because you can't actually see it in 2D, so...
Which is why I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I did you a were planning refuse. To, right? I was going to see it, yeah. I was going to see it, but when... If the only... You're going to force me to shell out extra for a film I don't even want to see in the first place. I'm only seeing it because it would be free. No.
Well, I dug my glasses out the cupboard.
Dusted them off and
braved it. So this is Dread 3D, directed by Pete Travis. Who cares? Based on a based on a comic series titled 2000 AD. It was made as Judge Dredd in the 90s, which I didn't see. Did you see that?
I saw like about half an hour of it back in like 1995 when Sly Stallone used to be relevant.
Yeah. Not good?
No. No, Demolition Man was better.
Okay. Well, there's nobody as big as Sly Stallone in this film.
Physically, or...?
It's, well, it's high profile right. at this moment. In fact, the only person I actually recognised was Domhnall Gleeson, who was Levin last week.
Right, what about Thelby?
Well, I didn't actually recognise her because she's got a blonde wig on throughout the film. Okay. So if I didn't actually know she was in it, I wouldn't have actually clocked it was her.
She wasn't accusing Jennifer Garner of being a homosexual, so you didn't.
Oh, there are no homosexuals in this film.
Really? I bet there's a lot of homoeroticism, though.
But anyway, he's kind of training Thirlby's character, Anderson, who's a psychic, to become one of these judges who basically monitor this future world, Metropolis, which is full of crime and drugs and violence and everything's a mess, basically.
So no different to our own right now.
Yeah, it might get that way. But... So these like cops called judges roam the streets, but they can only deal with 7% of all reported crimes because it's that widespread, and nobody wants to become a cop in that environment, unsurprisingly. So there's this dangerous drug going around called slow-mo, which makes everybody feel as if they're experiencing everything at 1% of real time.
Does the film do the same?
Yes. And that's, I'll get onto that, but that's a big excuse for the 3D. So they get called to this apartment block, Judge Dredd and Anderson, and the apartment block is run by Mama, who's this ex-prostitute who got scarred and is now a complete badass. So she runs the apartment block and she's got loads of people behind her. So she's had three guys skinned alive for a crime we don't know. And they investigate it. And she doesn't take too kindly to the judges invading her patch, so to speak. Seals off the building completely and sets everybody loose on the judges. So it's about them like trying to survive and then get justice.
Right.
So it's basically... all set in the building. So it's kind of like The Raid, I guess, but video gamey. So the only reason I can see that it's in 3D is because when the slow-mo happens, you get all these particles, because obviously the particles move slower, and then you get them coming together at the end when it speeds back up. So you get just things floating around.
So they like push, they like come towards you and stuff like that?
Just like little orbs.
Okay.
Because honestly, there's not a lot else.
Is it kind of like with Prometheus? Because I didn't see it in 3D, but I know you did.
Yeah.
That scene where stuff's like flying around.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. But I did like this film because it kind of sails above films that it's emulating, like video game films.
Like Resident Evil and what have you.
Yeah, because it's got an actual setting that you could believe and it completely commits to that.
Right.
So it's kind of like dark, grimy interiors, like to make it look like a hellhole. But it's not turgid action. Mm-hmm. It's actually quite believable in the circumstances. And It's quite compact because it's all set in this one building. It's 95 minutes and the plot isn't too complex. There aren't a lot of characters, so it's very kind of together and thought through, for like, for being all the more modest about that.
Right. So if you've seen the trailer, you know the setup, and then you're just going to get the action.
Yeah, and it's just about kind of going with it. There are, like, the acting isn't great. I mean, you like Olivia Thirlby, right?
I think we both do, yeah.
Yeah. She's not great in this.
What was the thing she was good in?
The Wackness.
Snow Angels? Snow Angels? Was she in that?
I haven't seen that. Yeah, I think she was in that.
Yeah, well don't. It's David Gordon Green. Awful. And says the guy who hates Sam Rockwell. That's probably why. Preconception corner.
Too many.
So Thelby, who's the woman playing the prostitute queen?
Lena Headey.
Oh, right, yeah.
I've heard of her, but I couldn't tell you what she was in.
300, I think.
Oh, God. Okay. So she likes big men in action.
Don't we all?
but the main guy is Carl Urban, who we mentioned, and he's pretty weak in this.
Really?
I mean, you know, you get tough guy actors who just kind of mumble lifelessly.
Yeah.
Just try to sound tough.
What's your score?
Score's B-. So not quite as ecstatic as other people, but...
Right, but on its own merits, does the job.
Yes.
Okay. So, Premium Rush. I think you're telling us about this one.
I am. Premium Rush...
And I'll keep quiet.
In keeping with the video game theme, Premium Rush could easily be a video game. It's kind of in that vein. It's directed by David Koepp, I think.
Yeah.
More famous for writing than directing. His directing history includes Secret Window with Johnny Depp.
What a hack job.
Yeah. Ghost Town with Ricky Gervais. That was okay.
Oh, okay.
And Stir of Echoes, interestingly. back in the 90s. So this is about Wiley, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and he's kind of a daredevil dude working for a bicycle courier service in New York City. We see him like collecting an envelope from this college campus to be delivered to, we don't know where, somewhere uptown. And he's kind of accosted by Michael Shannon's character, who's this corrupt NYPD cop. Who tries to convince him to give the envelope to him. Wiley's like civil at first, but then he doesn't hand over the envelope through whatever ethics he's got. So he gets chased by Michael Shannon's character, and we later learn that Michael Shannon's character has got himself in a gambling debt and needs whatever is in the envelope to kind of make amends. And that's all I'm going to say. Because there's some twists involved in this.
Yeah, and I really don't want to say anything about this film.
It's very short.
Because my mother did say if you don't have anything nice to say, you shouldn't say anything at all. But then again, if I did that, we wouldn't be doing a podcast and nobody would be listening.
Yeah, nobody would be listening if you were nice, for a start.
Yeah, well, no. This is just absolutely hideous, this film. It's just so atrocious. And I hated... Run Lola Run.
Right.
And this has got such a Run Lola Run vibe, but it hasn't got Frank Potenza. And I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but he's never been more charmless and less... He's just so obnoxious in this film. It's just... He's like he's putting on some sort of like tough bravado, cocky... American thing, and I just don't buy it for a second. And they're having all this like ridiculous, like he wants to get the he wants to get the envelope back because he doesn't have it at one point.
Yeah.
And instead of one of his colleagues giving it back to him, he decides to have an blackmail him into having a race in the park. That's how banal this the plotting of this film is. And of course, it's just an excuse to have another like 5 or 10 minute chase scene through a park.
Yeah.
On bikes.
And it's kind of 80 minutes of chasing, really. It's quite frenetic. See, I have some sympathy for it because I think that it does take risks and it basically commits to everything that it does.
Like with the yellow line and the start. Basically, about every like 10 or 15 minutes, he'll everything will stop.
Yeah.
And then he'll come to like a crossroads and there'll be like cars going around and he'll see like three different ways that he can die.
Yeah, well, that's why I was going to a little video game, because it is a little bit of like a first person video game at times. And the fact that it'll go and show you the flashbacks as well.
And like the second time they did that, I sort of thought, okay, it's a comedy, because you see the line go across to the right, and he sort of like follows it over, and then he like runs into some woman, and she goes, "My baby," and it's just from that point, I thought, okay, fine, I can like get on board as this as like some sort of like unintentional or tongue in cheek, not very serious thing.
Well, not but... you cannot believe this community of people for a start. I mean,
no,
these people really exist?
They probably do. But not in the way that it's presented.
I mean, there's like, so many egos at play in this, like.
Yeah, it's all masculine. There's jealousy about who's faster and who's got the girl, and that's sufficiently trite.
There was a line I wrote down. They're running reds and killing peds.
The other one was, "I'm in your draft, dude. It's like you're in on my team." that's what counts as trash talk, apparently, when you're racing someone through the park. Another one was, "I hate brakes. Brakes are death." And apparently, for David Kep, brakes are like interesting plotting, characterization, storyline. Because it literally is. Feels like he's just got this. Well, it's not even like a story, it's just an excuse to have a load of set pieces, and then because that's not enough, you then got to chop it up and have it in chop up the timeline, and so it feels like an exercise in screenwriting rather than anything else.
It's definitely too overt on the screenwriting front. There's lots of like heavy-handed plot points. It's just a lot of it you can't believe. But
Has Michael Shannon ever been worse?
Probably not. I don't know, because I didn't like him in The Runaways.
Okay.
What
about JGL?
I thought he was...
Did you like him in this? I don't know, maybe it's just me.
Yeah, I thought he was fine. Yeah. I think that his character has problems. Lots of characters have problems. Why does this cop on a bicycle pursue him for so long?
Yeah.
Risking his life.
And why is there only one bike cop in the whole city as well? Considering that it's taking them like an hour to like ride from like where they are, from the university to Chinatown.
Yeah.
And there's only one guy, and then none of them can communicate. And Michael Shannon, very early on in the film,
he does something bad. Is that what you mean?
And it's never brought up within the context of the police. It's just an afterthought thrown on right at the end, and the end is ridiculous. The very end, with how they resolve this situation, and
I think it works. Half works because in an unknown kind of way,
right.
Because I think it is ridiculous, but I think it is entertaining and completely watchable.
Do you think it really needs you to get on board with the tone very early on? And they do lay it all out there right at the beginning.
Yeah.
So it doesn't change.
Yeah. The flashbacks and the whole goofy kind of, I don't know, non-cinema of it.
Yeah. It feels like a really expensive like student short that has just been like they had taken out, like expanded out, and It really doesn't feel like a director's experience as Kep would be doing something like this. Did he write the script as well?
Yeah.
Maybe no one else wanted to do it.
But it is interesting because who would write this? I mean, this whole like aside with the Chinese woman, it's just ridiculous. But who would think of that? I think it's bold.
Because David Kep really made his name for himself because he basically sold the screenplay for Panic Room it was a record when it was like $5 or $6 million or something like that, which was just completely unheard of for a screenplay at the time. And so he's obviously heard about the idea of Panic Rooms and then thought, you know what, okay, I'll try and make a story around that. And so he's obviously heard about these bike couriers and thought, okay, I'll write a story around that. And then he's obviously heard about this Chinese method of transferring funds, and so he's just melded the two together. And of course, which might actually come into when we talk about Woody Allen, because that is kind of how Woody Allen works now. Apparently, according to his documentary, he just like has like this like, desk full of like old ideas from the 70s, and he just picks a few out and tries and sees how he can tie them together. But so that's why I say it does feel like a screenwriting exercise.
Yeah.
But, it also feels like a gigantic waste of my time.
Well, it is only 80 minutes, so...
I know, and you'd think you think I'd be tempted to say, well, you know what, it was only 80 minutes, but, I mean, oof.
Wow.
Yeah, really, 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 really didn't like this one.
Getting good reviews.
Really?
Yeah.
Another really for you there. Why? Who's giving this good reviews?
People? I don't know.
People.
I think it's okay. I think it's alright. Mm. I'm on the B minus, I'm afraid.
B minus. I have such contempt for this film. I haven't even thought of a score. It's probably in 2 or 3. Probably 3.
Okay.
What could I give? I could probably give it a star for some of the scenes of like bicycling.
A bicycle.
Yes.
But, I think that's where you would go. I don't think there's much room for in the middle. I mean, I think it's okay, but
you'll either dig it or you won't.
Yeah, it's either a pass or a fail, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So
back to Woody.
Woody Allen's back. Well, you can set your clock, can't you? Every year, he's back with another film to Roam with Love. Following. I don't know, maybe it's part two of a European trilogy from Midnight in Paris last year. Best Picture nominated.
It seems like the last decade's been a European trilogy for him.
So this is... Bear with me here. There's about four stories in this film. Mm. First is Woody Allen and Judy Davis play husband and wife, parents of this American girl who's marrying an Italian man.
So many ways I could take the piss out of that. Go.
not as bad as you might think.
Okay, so they go to marry the daughter.
No. So they go to the in-laws in Italy. Woody Allen's a retired opera director. Finds out the Italian father's got a great singing voice. Tries to make a star out of him.
As you do.
And there's this joke that you can't sing outside of the shower. But anyway, the second story is about a young couple. The girl's about to meet her in-laws, drops the phone down the drain, can't find the place where they're supposed to be meeting at this restaurant, stumbles upon a film set and has kind of a liaison with the leading man. Meanwhile, her fiancé is being seduced by Penelope Cruz.
Why wouldn't you be?
Why wouldn't you be? I think I would, even at this point. third story is Jesse Eisenberg, aspiring architect, and his girlfriend's Greta Gerwig. Girlfriend's best friend, who's played by Ellen Page, comes over from America and has a reputation for making men fall in love with her.
How?
Yeah. So cue the fun. And Alec...
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
Do shenanigans actually into you.
cue the shenanigans. And Alec Baldwin plays Jesse Eisenberg's hallucination, slash conscience.
Okay.
As popular Woody Allen device there. Mm. And the last story involves Roberto Benigni's character becoming famous for no apparent reason and how he deals with that.
So kind of like his real life then.
Okay. This is To Run With Love. This is quite funny.
Really?
Yeah. Although we both have different takes on Woody Allen's kind of humour.
And what is funny.
What is funny.
And we have different takes on what is funny. I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
Thousands wouldn't.
Well, it feels more like a foreign film. Like you would go and see an Italian film made by an Italian.
Right. So it's sexist and...
Yes, a little bit, yeah. But it's produced by an Italian, and it's got Italian actors. Half of it's in Italian, so it makes sense. But he generally has fresher, savvier political commentary than Midnight in Paris did.
Shouldn't
be hard, yeah. But no, it's decent. But he takes a lot of pops at celebrity, like Roberto Benigni's character is famous for no reason. Like, he walks out of his house one day and he's got paparazzi all around him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of interview him on television and they ask what he had for breakfast and, like, inane questions like that.
Oh, okay.
And everybody's, like, goes mad for him. And then it's about how he deals with the celebrity being taken away as well. And about just how, like, the kind of e-news culture now. Like, the in God Bless America.
So it's a companion piece to That's My Boy, then?
Well, not quite as crass, but it's getting there at times. But yeah, I mean, it's got obviously got the snobbish thing that Europeans like about Woody Allen films. They walk out of this Italian film called The Solitude of Prime Numbers. Have you heard of that? Played at Venice a couple of years ago.
Really?
And Benigni saying, oh, it's brilliant, it's better than the King's Speech. If I had a vote, there would be no question. So, he's clearly taking a pop at kind of the Academy and everybody's kind of how they're enslaving the Academy, in a way. Or the Academy's enslaving people. To think they're the be-all and end-all.
Well, the thing is, to be fair to Alan, he didn't ever turn up until 9/11. So,
yeah, and he wasn't even nominated, right?
Yeah, he's not really being hypocritical there because he's always had a sufficient amount of disdain for it all.
And he left straight away, I think. Like, as soon as he did his bit, and then he just went. But yeah, I mean, he's never liked. He's not one of these people like George C. Scott. I'll have a nomination and then next year, well.
Can you give me tickets in the back?
But he's always kind of had that being his bonnet a little bit. But I think this film it's a very random film. Like, all of the stories aren't really connected thematically.
Do you think that's because, like, it's apparently shown in the documentary that he does literally just go to his desk and pick out, like, random things and it's just...
Yeah. Yeah.
Old regurgitated, basically. It's not even regurgitating, it's just stuff like ideas that he hadn't wrote down on a napkin in like 1976. I mean, I know with Vicky Cristina Barcelona was basically something that, like a draft that he'd done years ago. And then he just basically changed the setting because the Spanish were giving the money to make it.
Yeah.
So.
A Midnight in Paris sounds like something somebody would write ages ago. I don't know if he did.
And the reason that his stories are getting told in these countries is because basically Woody Allen's career has been saved by France, Italy, and Spain, because his films
financed
always make the same amount of money. I think it's between $15 and $20 million.
Yeah,
it's guaranteed. It's always that is, yeah. All of them, even like the ones that like have do nothing in America
in Europe.
Just those three countries, you're going to get between $15 and $20 million. So what does he do? He has a budget of about $15 million, and because he's Woody Allen, he can get these ridiculous casts because they want to work with Woody Allen. And then so then you've got he's going to get the audience in there, so it doesn't even matter if it's a hit in America or gets good reviews in America.
He'll be making films. I wouldn't surprise me if he was making films in 10-15 years time. Still. Mm. Still haunting us.
As long as people let him do it. Yeah, so I saw a review which said it wasn't a bad Woody Allen film, it was four bad Woody Allen films.
It was the fourth worst.
No, he said it wasn't a bad Woody Allen film, it was four bad Woody Allen films, I think, like, because it was four segments.
Oh, right, really?
Yeah, I think that was The Independent. It randomly came across a review. I didn't go out seeking the negative ones.
I think
honest bit, governor.
I think bits of every segment work, but some bits don't. It's a bit of a hodgepodge. There's like a random thing about Penelope Cruz. I say seduces a guy. She comes
Ravages.
In. Well, she comes in and thinks that he's somebody's hired an escort. She's an escort for him.
Right.
But he kind of, well, it's the wrong guy. And then his in-laws walk in and she has to pretend to be his girlfriend.
Right.
Meanwhile, his girlfriend's gallivanting off somewhere else. So
okay. That's
all a little bit... That wouldn't happen, basically.
No.
The Penelope Cruz side of it wouldn't happen. But it's still watchable. And the Eisenberg, Paige Gerwig love triangle. And I love those three actors, so on paper I should really like that, but I don't think it's that interesting either.
Okay. Right. So, best in the cast?
Best in the cast would probably be... one of the Italians, probably.
Okay.
Or maybe maybe Judy Davis.
Kelsey Bruce.
Or Woody Allen's quite good as well, himself.
Well, yeah, that's certainly up for debate.
But yeah.
Score out of 10?
Well, C+.
Yeah.
So just recycled a little bit, but still, I don't know, good. Because Midnight in Paris was just thin.
Well, the word I've been using to describe... Because, as I said last week, I instituted the rule that I will watch Woody Allen films if he directs them, but not if he's in them, because I find it's him that makes me dislike him, like them so much. But I'm okay if it's just the writing. And I think the word I find myself using a lot when talking about the films he's directed recently is their follies. They're just these little like puff pieces, and it's just like they're there to give him something to do. Just to
hobby.
Give him, like, a couple of... Yeah, like a couple of months' work in the summer, and then that's it. And there's nothing really serious going on, and it's just
apart from Match Point. I don't think there's been anything in the last 20 years that's been particularly great.
Yeah, and that's just because he was ripping off Dostoevsky. So
and Hitchcock.
Yeah. So did it feel like a folly, or just like
it felt like a folly, but it felt. Because it felt like an Italian film, which are folly, so it felt better. It felt coming from a more genuine place.
Right, okay. Right.
Should we get on to this? Do we remember this film? Do you remember
this film? Yeah, I do remember this film. Not all the specifics. but yeah, so about Ellie, it was at the Berlin Film Festival in 2009. And as I said, I watched it because I really love the beautiful city. And it's about a family who go to like a beach holiday, and they invite one of their children's, there's like three couples, they invite like one of their children's school teacher along because one of the guys has just got divorced from his wife in Germany. He's come back to Iran, and they're like trying to set her up with him. They all go there, and they the chalet or whatever it is isn't really ready for them, so they get this like run down shack which they've got to like live in instead, and so they try and make the best of it, and so there's no reception there. You have to like drive into town, just use the phone and all stuff like this, and then after about like half an hour, maybe 45 minutes, the film really turns. And what happens is that the girl, Ellie, who's the teacher, she's on the beach looking after the kids. And you see her running along the beach with a kite. And then you see her say something like, hold this, I've got to go, or something like that. And then the next thing you see, the kids are running to go and get the dad, who are like, and the one of them's like in the water, and it's all hell breaks loose. And the girl... has completely disappeared.
Oh my god. What, drowned?
It's a mystery.
Do you find out?
So it's kind of
La Ventura.
Yeah, and we I think I mentioned before. Well, I don't know if I have mentioned.
Probably, we had an Anton Yoni thing, didn't we?
Of course, yeah. So it's that sort of Picnic at Hanging Rock, La Ventura thing, and I really don't like Picnic at Hanging Rock or La Ventura, but, and there is a but in this, I do think what they do is, which those films don't, what this does is it uses her disappearance in order to bring up social questions.
Yeah. Is that like a metaphor for
it
women?
Examines the society, and so that when they're like discussing what's happened, why has she done this, and like, so the blame goes around, and then so what do we do? We're the ones who've got her out here. We don't even know her real first name, so they realise just how little they actually know her, and then so it's all the sort of responsibility comes on, and it's all the cultural stuff, and that is quite interesting, and it's a good cast. It's got Body of Lies, the nurse in Body of Lies, Goldshifteh Farahani. Stupidly good looking.
It's really women often are.
Yeah. So it's the main thrust of the acting is from the women. But unfortunately for me, Tarana Aladutsi disappears. It does feel like a play. At times when they're like examining, well, you got all the vocalizing and examining all the what's been going on, and there's a
long talky scenes. So.
Yeah. But it's probably a necessary evil, and given the way that they deal with the subjects and you delve under the skin of it, it's fine. So the reason this is being released is because A Separation won the Oscar last year, and now people actually know who he is.
Yeah.
So I'm coming from a completely different place because I saw this 2 years ago,
before Separation.
Was even a glint in the Academy's eye. And we famously didn't like A Separation that much, did we?
Well, I'm mixed on it.
That's why I said that much. As much as
other people, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what this film does is what that film doesn't. And my big problem with A Separation is that it's like anti-drama all the way through. The techniques that he uses, you hold a piece of information back or what have you, or you show a piece of information, and then that negatively affects on what makes it dramatic or not. Because if you already know something, then if people are arguing about something stemming from that, if you know it's not true, then you tune out. Or if when the big reveal of something comes and it's really unsatisfactory, then it kind of like undercuts everything.
Yeah.
And those are the sort of things, criticisms that I had with A Separation. That isn't here. And it certainly wasn't in The Beautiful City, which we mentioned last week, because it's kind of like The Forgiveness of Blood, in that it's all about persuading, somebody's got all the power and you're persuading them. That's what all Tarana Aladutsi does. She's there to plead for someone's life with this guy because he's going to be put to death because the family have that power, but they also have the power to let him go if forgive him if they want. And so what he's doing with these films is he's sort of like on a big downward spiral, really, which is really strange for me to be feeling that when he's just becoming so praised.
The problem with A Separation for me was the whole obsession with blame,
yeah,
portioning off blame, and everybody had to have a secret and a hang up, and it all felt like too much, and it didn't feel genuine at times.
Yeah,
but I'm guessing this one feels a bit more genuine about Ellie.
More so, but it's as I said, stagey, so you might find it a bit manufactured.
But I liked La Ventura, so I might like this.
Yeah. I think it's certainly got more meat in the bones than that. So.
Okay.
Anyway, it's worth a look, especially if you liked either, or if you haven't seen any. And I'd certainly start with this before Separation, which is probably the most random, unexpected recommendation we'll give on this podcast. next for the biggest release of the week, I guess. Hope
yes,
Springs.
It has to be the biggest release. It's got Meryl Streep in it.
Well, yeah. And it's about a couple who are very, very set in their ways. They barely speak to each other. There's zero intimacy whatsoever. One day, Meryl Streep has enough and decides she wants to go to intensive couples counselling in Maine with Steve Carell.
As you do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, why not? And so she basically emotionally blackmails Tommy Lee Jones, her husband, into going. He really doesn't want to go. He doesn't see this problem. He's he's an accountant, I guess. Yeah.
In finance. Yeah.
Very bored accountant. And so when they get up there, it's all about Carell trying to open them up, and Tommy Lee Jones being extremely reluctant to do so.
Yes. Hope springs, and does hope spring?
It springs, but then it falls flat on its face and then drags itself out for what feels like 2.5 hours.
Does it?
It felt so long. When I was actually on the escalator on the way out of there, I was actually trying to gauge the exact minute time of how long I thought the film was. How long?
It's 99 minutes.
That's what I can't believe, because I was thinking, I got out there, I was like, how is it 5:30? Because I got into the cinema at like 3:35. How is it 5:30? Because that film was 2.5 hours. It's like I was watching The English Patient.
I think the main problem with that is because it doesn't... Well, you never see their children, for a start. And you never get enough backstory. And you never get another dimension. It's always just the three characters. You've got about 90% of the film is them getting the counselling. And the other 5% at either end is them at home.
Which I really don't buy, and it probably was a very, very bad idea to be watching both the original Israeli and American remakes of In Treatment over the last couple of weeks before watching this, because the therapy seems in this film seems really just to go completely against everything that I know about it. I mean,
but it's not a dramatic film, really. It's not.
I was going to say it's not a comedy.
It's a dramedy.
Yeah. Well, no. It is. Well, if you watch like the average episode of House, then you are going to get at least a dozen belly laughs from Hugh Laurie just giving like these random grouchy comments. But it's a drama. I mean, with this, there are probably like 2 or 3 scenes that are really, really played for laughs. I'm thinking like Meryl with the bananas.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the scene in the hotel room. And I'm struggling now to think of any like genuinely... like
the corgis.
Yeah, I mean, and how stupid is that? You put the last scene of the film in the trailer?
I think you can kind of tell it was the last scene of the film. I was thinking it's going to be the last scene of the film. You're about halfway through.
Because they're obviously back, and he's obviously, yeah. I think the problem with it, and why it probably felt so long to me, was because it is just scene after scene of like the marital non-bliss, and them like saying how unsatisfied they are. And basically, Steve Carell, he's not really a therapist. I think he's like a life coach.
Yeah.
Who just wants to tell them to have sex and everything will be all right. And so when you have... It's when I think of like... The guy did The Devil Wears Prada, right? David Frankel.
Yeah.
And that was zippy. And it's like from scene to scene to scene to scene. And it gets to get the laugh, cut scene. And they do some dramatic stuff in there. But it always feels like it's moving on. Whereas this just feels like inertia sets in.
But it's a different film. It's a much older film. Mm. It's more earnest. I mean,
it's pretty serious, really, when some of the stuff they're going on about, where they're like having to like detail their.
This is why I'm really kind of pleased that this film exists, because there aren't many films about older people having sex or not having sex, or about why sex and intimacy is important to older people, because it's kind of assumed that older people just forget about it and move on when they kind of don't.
I think, positive side, I think they do a very good job of setting up Streep's character at the beginning. Before you get the whole, the way the routine's gone and how she the first scene, like she tries to get into the bedroom, because they have separate bedrooms.
Yeah.
And she gets turned down, and then you get that it's literally like they've been in this rut for years, so I do think that's quite good. I mean, why was Elizabeth Shue in one scene in this film?
Yeah, what a waste. I mean,
That's just offensive, and you put it in the trailer as well, just like tease.
I think Streep is a little struggles a little with the tone of the film, because I think she's trying to make it lighter when it shouldn't be. Mm. Like in the scene where she's kind of pleased with the things he does.
Yeah.
It just feels like a little mannered and a little like kind of sweet. But I think Tommy Lee Jones is really, really good in this, because his character arc is a little extreme at times.
It goes
a bit wildly for me. I mean,
it is like hold back, leap forward about
eons.
It's like, I don't want to do this. Okay, fine, go on then. another little bit I liked, which I found quite realistic, is that when they first start going, he's just complaining the whole time, and in an amusing way, and you can see after about like every third one, he makes Street laugh, and so you can actually see that it's not as if they're just these two people who are at each other's throats the whole time. He does still genuinely amuse her, and this isn't anything that's ever like brought up, because it's all put in the on the whole physical side of it. That's what the film's obsessed by.
Yeah.
But I think it's good that in those scenes outside of that, where they're like outside the office and they're just going back to the hotel or what have you, and he's complaining, you can see that even though he's complaining, and you'd think, well, she should be like really annoyed with him because he's just like not making an effort. At least you can see that she there's that dynamic there, and that she does is genuinely amused by him.
I mean, you see like that that might have been like that in the past, but less extreme. Mm. And that's kind of reminding her of how he was. But then it all comes to a head on certain occasions, and she just...
There's lots of head in this film.
Yeah, yeah, but this is good. I like films about older people having sex.
The more time you can get Meryl Streep on in these, trying to give fellatio in a semi-deserted cinema, the better, quite frankly.
I heard somebody make the argument that this film probably wouldn't have been made were it not for
Meryl Streep.
Well, yeah, but for, well, it's complicated.
Yeah.
Judy and Julia, not about the sex with Judy and Julia, but just like fun, about all the women having fun. Mamma Mia, maybe even. Mm.
But then again, this is really serious. It's about a woman who's not having fun.
Yeah, but it's about women, like, kind of free women. I don't know, in a way, kind of saying what they want.
From
the situation, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it feels like a little bit like a Nancy Meyers film to me, which is a good, because I like Nancy Meyers generally, but a little bit problematic.
Yeah, I think it's all right, and it's quite a lot of it's mildly amusing. I like him. Sort of like Tommy Lee Jones' tightness in the film.
Yeah,
how he's like, he just says, point out, but they're in, because they're in the little town. It's basically all like the only big thing there is this guy's therapist, intensive couples therapy, and so he's like walks past the coffee shop. He said, "I bet you won't be able to get breakfast in there for under $10." And of course, they go in and it's $11.75. You just see the look on his face, and it's almost like he's gloating to her.
It reminds me of my dad as well, like, when they're like talking about the sex and he like starts reading the paper and stuff when she's talking about her sexual history.
He reminds me of my dad when he's fallen asleep in front of the Golf Channel and she has to come and wake him up.
I don't know.
But yeah, it's some of it I do feel it's a little bit obsessed with the whole sex thing, and she does go on about how she wants to make the relationship better, and it's almost as if that is the increased intimacy, that's the only thing that's going to keep her in there. And it's fair enough, it's obviously important, but I think they never look at any of the areas outside of that and any of the dynamics of the relationship outside of that. And I suppose it's because that's why she's gone. And so that's the driving force, but...
Well, yeah, but I think they kind of say that that's why it happened in the first place, because he moved out of the room.
Mm.
Not necessarily the sex, but just, like, kind of the intimacy and how that's kind of snowballed into everything else. maybe.
It is pretty sad in places, just in general for how they're portraying the how the relationship's gone. But I wasn't convinced by the end.
Well, I was worried at the end a little bit.
I know what you mean. That she'd done a U-turn. But yeah, I know what you mean. And then they sort of save it with the last line.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. It's not something you'd really recommend a couple who've been married like 30 years ago.
Definitely not.
It's like Revolutionary Road. It's like the worst things about marriage just thrown up on screen. So kind of like it's complicated. It's complicated. I have no idea who they're marketing it to, because it was all these like people in their like late 50s, early 60s, or what have you. And then, but it played out like a sort of very juvenile.
Very juvenile, yeah.
Yeah, like with the pot smoking and like the bed hopping and what have you.
Yeah.
So it did feel like it was like really designed for the 18 to 30 date crowd. Whereas with this, I don't think this is the 18 to 30 date crowd, and I really don't think it's the 50 plus crowd.
Oh, well, there were lots of old women when I saw it. Older women, even.
Yeah, yeah. You think it's the bridge club?
Widows. You can't complain about the match of the dead.
Widows, yeah. Right. So, score?
I'm giving this a B.
Yeah, it's a 5, so 3. Just about 3 stars, because it's watchable. But
okay.
So average. In the end.
Okay. Right. Are we gonna do a little bit?
Shag Marry Kill.
Yeah.
Shag. I've actually got to look at these now, again. I'm trying to remember what was good. So little.
Well, I'll go first. I'll shag Woody. On this occasion.
I think so. This is our one night stand. We've got to watch, if we could have to watch another film again now, then we'd do that. So I think mine, if I had to watch another one now, it would probably actually be The Sweeney, because I just like hope that Hayley Atwell actually did get naked this time around, and then I'd be disappointed again, but it'd be at least less depressing than Streep, even though I think Hope Springs is a better film.
Okay.
So, marry, so watch every film, every weekend for the rest of your life, about Ellie. It's the only good film this week for me, so it'd have to be that one. It's tough.
Part of me says Premium Rush, because I just...
It's so undemanding in the 80 minutes for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it's just... I can imagine just kind of sitting there and becoming comforted by it eventually. But
yeah, well, that would be difficult, because I would have killed it and burnt every
yeah, every cinematic that was about to happen.
Yes, so that's my kill, getting rid of every, burning all the cinematic negatives. Which one are you gonna do that for?
Oh, I can't kill. I liked everything this week.
You've got Dread left. You've got
I can't kill Dread. I could kill The Sweeney, because I never want to see that ever.
You got Hope Springs.
No, I'd have to be The Sweeney. Oh wait, can we kill Lincoln before it's even come out?
Yeah. I think that's the good compromise. Right. We did have a question, because what we did for a long time was we did top threes after our main one, and I think the natural top three last week would have been what are our best adaptations of classic literature. And so we did have Ibby ask us, anyone's welcome to comment on the blog or send an email, as we say at the end. And Ibby commented and asked us what our best adaptations of classic literature would be. So what's your adaptation of a novel, best adaptation of a novel in film?
Well, the ultimate, I think, has to be Gone with the Wind.
I thought you might say that.
Which, well, because it's my favourite film, but it is incredibly literary. In structure, and it's exactly what a classic film should be. What's yours?
Well, I'm going to go really sideways on this one.
Yeah, really?
I'm going really sideways to make a point. And so the film I'm going to choose is The Ninth Gate. You know the Polanski film with Johnny Depp?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
And the reason I'm doing that is because last week we were talking about Anna Karenina, was a lot. I was criticising it a lot for what it didn't do that was in the book. And what this does, and my point is, you don't have to slavishly do what's in the book in order to do a good adaptation. And what Roman Polanski did with the Ninth Gate was, he cut the original book, The Dumas Club, he cut half of it out. There's this whole like other storyline. You've got the storyline to do with the devil on the one side, and you've got the storyline to do with the Dumas Club on the other. And it's called, the book's called The Dumas Club, and he just got rid of it all, and just because he just wanted to concentrate on that. And it is the more interesting part when you're reading the book. That is the thing that always comes back to it. It's always more compelling. It's interesting. And so the film is way better than the book for me.
I quite like the film, yeah.
I think it's a really underrated film in general. But it's weird, don't get me wrong.
It's very weird, yeah.
And the tone is a bit strange. But I think, having read the book, I think they just did a really, really good job with it. And, yes. So that was our question. Now, one I might have said...
Yeah.
which we're going to do now in a new section called the Red Light District. Which is where we basically pimp something.
Yeah, is it that we've seen lately, or you just decided to pimp anything?
Can be anything. I'm going to pimp something I've seen lately.
Yeah.
This is another one I could have said in the adaptations. Easy for me to say. Adaptation of a Murakami film, short story. Tony Takitani from 2005. I watched it in the week. Gave it a rewatch in the week.
Mm.
Does it
hold up?
Yeah, really does. It's one of my favourite films of 2005, and that's a super year. Really deep.
Yeah.
And it's just 70. You're talking about 80 minutes for the
running time.
74 minutes. Wow. For Tony Takitani, and it's slow, and it's just this ebbing gorgeous. It's like the way it's shot. It's like the camera always pans off. It's like the turning of a page. You've got the these voiceovers with Murakami's prose, and stunningly moving and depressing. Yes, but it's a you. I think only the Southeast Asians, because you see it with like The Road Home and what have you. See all these like adult dramas about adult things, and they're youth certificates. It's completely unthinkable.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. So what are you pimping for everyone out there?
Well, I just saw this last night. Georgia from 1995.
Yes, yes, yes.
Starring Jennifer Jason Leigh. It's about two sisters. One of the sisters, Georgia, is the famous singer. The other one is also a singer, but she's a drug and alcohol addict, and she's a complete mess. Jennifer Jason Leigh is brilliant in it.
Super, super.
Really good. Not a performance I thought you'd like. I thought you'd think it was, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big performance, but yeah, it's really, really good.
Yeah, and also her sister, Mary Winningham, nominated for Best Supporting Actress, is also excellent.
Wasn't as good. I'd rather Leigh got nominated personally.
Yeah, but tough year.
Yeah, and it was weak in supporting actors as well. Point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. Because it was. Mm. It didn't make anything at the box office. So.
Yeah, but this was back when Jennifer Jason Leigh was doing really good work year in, year out.
Yeah.
And she just wasn't getting Oscar nominations.
Yeah.
So.
Still
without.
But it's a wonderful film. Really good. And the music is really good as well. Mm. Yeah. Good.
I'll salute
did
that
you
one.
Like that one, yeah?
I did like... I primarily liked...
Her more than the
JGL.
Film. Yeah.
But it's an interesting dynamic, certainly. That sibling rivalry. Literally rivalry. And she's almost like embarrassed. The sister is almost like embarrassed at times that she's gone. But then there's nothing she can do about it.
Yeah.
You can't keep they've gone past the point at the beginning of this film where she can't apologise for it anymore. It's just a matter of fact.
But she's also kind of a little bit in contempt of the younger sister as well. I mean, it's... I don't think you can fall firmly on one side. I think it's very, like, kind of hazy in the middle, and that's what's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Okay. We have a blog. It's moveforpodcast.com. .blogspot.com. We have a Twitter at Move Podcast, and we have a feed burner, and we are on iTunes. And email any questions to movepodcast@gmail.com, or just comment on the blog post for this episode.
Mm-hmm. Or on my, or on either of our blogs.
Or on either, yeah.
There are various ways of getting us.
Yeah.
But yes. Right, so anything for next week?
Next.
It seems pretty stacked next week, actually, the last time I looked.
Yeah, we've got...
If I just bring up the Cineworld page...
We've got Killing Them Softly with Brad Pitt.
Yeah, which is interesting. The guys that I go to the pub with, they've heard of that one, yeah. Well, the thing is, you've got to remember, a lot of guys in like their 30s quite like Chopper, because it's like a prison film. It was like one of the early parts of when DVD first came in. So a lot of guys like in their 30s have seen Chopper.
Right.
Yeah.
We've also got Savages, which has been mixed... received mixed reception, to say the least.
Yes. There is the atrocious looking Now Is Good.
Yeah.
And I say that
Preconception corner a bit early there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks like Restless Part 2. This time it's accented.
We've got Jennifer Lawrence from Oscar Raves.
Potential
to... Bland Horror.
House at the
End of the Street. Yeah, which is, I think it's a remake, but...
Is it? Well...
I'll see that, will you?
Probably. I do like it. Preconception Corner.
Mm.
But then again, I saw the trailer didn't look spectacular.
No.
Let's just put it that way.
And we also have Hysteria. Maggie Gyllenhaal in a film about sex, for a change.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean... Why wouldn't you? So yes, that is about it, and I'm just gonna stop talking.
I'm just gonna get off to sleep by putting the Lincoln trailer on.
Yes, and I'm gonna wait another 76 years for a British person to win a Grand Slam.
Oh, will we be alive by then? Probably not. No.
Probably not, but I mean, then again, we probably won't be once we've seen the Lincoln, actual film of Lincoln, because I think we're going to have to stop the pain, stop this bleeding. I think we know why Dakota Fanning chose not to have chemo now, because Lincoln was coming out.
Thank you.